This week on the show, the tablet is almost here. Secretary Clinton focuses on freedom, and Conan O'Brien weighs his options. Right here on This Week in Media, number 168. Hey everyone, welcome back to This Week in Media. It's Alex Lindsay here, and I am going to, I'm taking over. Daisy is at NAPTA. She's running all over crazy shooting video. You've seen her a little bit, Tim. Tim is at NAPTA. Tim Street.
I have. You know, if I see her run by, I'll just grab her and make her say hello.
Exactly. She was too busy for us, though. I mean, she of course had a lot of stuff. I mean, when you go to these shows, it's amazing that Tim was even able to stop for a couple minutes.
Well, she's like a celebrity in this TV world. You know,
right.
People know her from TV Week and the different things she's done over the years. So she's really busy here.
Yeah.
She's like Alex Lindsay at a tech convention.
Also on the show here, we have back after a long time, Andy Beach, author of Real World Video Compression. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Alex. How you doing?
Good.
Hey,
it's great to have you back.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm really glad to be back. It has been a long time, so I've missed chatting with you guys and Daisy and the likes.
And this is an exciting show. This is going to be the last show before the Impact.
This is the one.
This is it. So, of course, the Impact we're talking about is Apple. Apple is going to be released something that I think is going to affect our industry dramatically. I mean, as all the rumors come out, you have no idea whether these rumors are actually going to turn out. But as they start to come out, it just seems like, you know, Apple has figured out all these pieces. They've waited until they could get all the pieces together. This is from the Wall Street Journal, who has talked to evidently many people familiar with the situation, quote unquote. But they say that the new tablet that is debuting this week, according to Wall Street Journal, Steve Jobs is betting he can reshape businesses like textbooks, newspapers, and televisions, much the way the iPod revamped the music industry. In developing the device, Apple focused the role on a gadget that could play in homes and classrooms with people. I love this. People familiar with the situation. So Tim, do you think their eyes are on too much, or are they, or is all of that really available for a tablet like this?
Oh, not at all. I think their heart is in the right place. Their eyes are on the prize. I mean, if you take a look at the home video industry and how VHS changed the way we consume entertainment, and then DVD came along and just blew the doors off VHS, I think that's what's going to happen here. The iPhone has been the VHS of this industry, and now this new tablet's going to come in, and it's going to be the DVD of a new entertainment platform. So I'm really excited about this.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting is that you really have this situation where it doesn't have to be any one thing. I mean, you're really talking about a device that can that theoretically, we don't even know what it is yet, but we have a fairly good idea that it's going to be able to, you're going to be able to read on it, you're going to be able to watch video on it, you're going to be able to listen to things on it, and theoretically communicate with other people. Now, Andy, does this, from a video compression perspective, does a device like this pose a lot of bandwidth issues and possibly cell tower issues?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's definitely been something that I think the iPhone has been such a data hog for AT&T, and they've really discovered that the bandwidth becomes an issue. But I think if this is a device that truly does have some sort of 3G capability, but also is heavily integrated with Wi-Fi, the video aspects aren't, you know, the data draws the video might inherently have with it aren't that big a deal.
We've heard a lot about the dynamic streaming. So, and this is something I know
right.
that you've been really deep into of being able
yeah.
to decide, okay, this is the kind of device you're getting. This is the kind of bandwidth you have, and on the fly, being able to switch back and forth between whatever is the most appropriate. How are people using this right now? How close to the surface is it?
Oh yeah, I mean, this is something every company that has a major draw in the video world is looking for ways to use adaptive bitrate streaming to improve the user quality and the overall video quality. So basically, it's having multiple streams available and then on the fly being able to jump between them. Microsoft has it built into their Silverlight technology. Apple has it built into the iPhone. with adaptive bitrate streaming, and Flash has it with what they call dynamic streaming, and they've even pre-announced some HTTP adaptive streaming. So the ways that that is totally going to affect a device like this is that as you move from that cell tower to the Wi-Fi to some other type of connection, you're going to be able to continue to watch and stream the video content, so you don't have to have it cached locally. You can still be having a cloud-based experience, and you're just going to lose some video quality here and there as you buffer up and down that pipeline. And that's really going to help with the overall experience on the user side, so that I'm not stuck, you know, watching a pause button for 30 seconds while I buffer in more content or while my Wi-Fi reconnects.
Yeah. So the it's hard to tell, how this goes, but it looks like beyond the video, it seems like it shakes up, the entire market as far as how you sell stuff. We're seeing Amazon already reacting. So Amazon is, they have changed the way that they're actually charging. Major publishing houses obviously have been talking to Apple. And until now, Amazon pretty much controlled the digital book market. I mean, they really had most of the market, and now they are making concessions. Yesterday, they said that they begin giving authors and publishers a larger share of the split for the books sold on the Kindle. They're releasing an SDK for the Kindle to allow third parties to design applications for the Kindle. Tim, is this really? Does Amazon have a chance against the whatever Apple's new device is? And if they have a chance, what do they have to do to succeed?
I think they need to partner with BlackBerry.
Ouch.
You look at anything out there. I mean, we've all drank the Kool-Aid, and we're iPhone freaks on this show. But there are a lot of people out there that aren't going to buy this tablet. There are people that are going to stay in the PC world, and there are people that love their Kindle, and they're going to stay with that. You know, it's kind of like, for a lot of people, you stay with the type of computer that you grew up on. And I think we're going to see the same thing here. Amazon has a huge amount of traffic. They've got a huge affiliate program. They will keep the ball rolling, and they'll just have to react and make their product better so that it can compete. Also, when you think about digital content, it's not so much about the player, it's not so much about the hardware where it is about the software. So if their software can keep up with what Apple is doing, and that from a content distributor standpoint, if I can sell it on the Kindle and sell it on the iPhone, hey, I'm all for it, and that'll keep them alive. It's just, how much trouble is it going to be to port it over, and will it work as nicely as it does on this tablet?
Well, yeah, and I think that the issue that you get into here is that when you're looking at, I just think the way we look at content is going to change in a way that right. it's just no longer going to be a book. I mean, I think that we're moving on to where, just text may not exist very often. I mean, Andy, do you see this as something where we start to have all this media just kind of all mashed together? Since you have, this is really the first device that lets you do that, right?
Yeah, I mean, in many perspectives, I mean, it's nothing that you couldn't have done with like a laptop before necessarily, but it's not quite that same level of interactivity that you want. There you were sort of used to, you have this keyboard right in front of you and you're expecting to use it or integrate it in. I think I've heard you talk about this a lot before, and it's something that we both agree on, is I'm really hopeful that they have some sort of interactive authoring environment that comes along with this device.
Yeah.
So that we have a very specific way to create content that's geared towards this as a publishing medium, because there could be some really interesting training, or educational, but even entertainment content that comes out that's really focused on how you present here.
I really see this as one of those things. This is where our training is all going to go.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
This is the thing you want to set next to your computer to watch lynda.com, for instance, or anything like that, where you could simply move it over. Now, also in the news related to this is that Apple is ending the iPhone exclusivity deal. This is the rumor, This is a rumor from Shelley Palmer. The rumor is that they may be dropping the AT&T this week. We don't know. We don't know if that's the case. Do you think it makes sense for them to stick with AT&T, Tim?
Uh, you know, there's a lot of unhappy people that have iPhones, and the only thing that they're unhappy with is AT&T.
Right.
But I have to wonder, you know, if they switch over and the new device goes on Verizon, is that going to kill Verizon? You know, they're just moving so much data with these devices. I don't know that we're prepared to handle it in the U.S. Not like it's Japan where everybody's walking around doing video conferencing on their phones.
Well, the other question, the question for you, Andy, is does it make sense just to share the pain, not be exclusive with anybody? Go actually start making it available to everyone and letting everybody deal with the bandwidth problems.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, what we will find out if the exclusivity does end is we'll find out just how bad Verizon's data network is in comparison to AT&T's. Like, I don't think that AT&T's is that inherently worse. I think that they just haven't had the major hit that AT&T has had from iPhone users.
Right. Now, there's been a lot of pieces. I think this is from Engadget, just to talk a little bit more about the tablet. The tablet, according to many of the rumors, this is what people are thinking that you're going to be able to do. There's a great photo, and I think we got this from, I'm sorry, in our notes, it's not totally clear. This is from iLounge. Some of the things people think, be able to use both Wi-Fi and, if applicable, user's mobile data service. Have access to e-magazines and newsprint, print, radio, TV, web. Be able to connect to a home server. Be able to do basic work, word processing, spreadsheet, presentations, folder sharing. Access to media on the home network. Web browser, obviously. Ability to work with textbooks and ebooks. Ability to underline, select, click on search topic, see video and audio, along with sharing your thoughts with people who have the same book. Be able to sync with your choice of cloud software and have a virtual keyboard and the ability to have a wireless keyboard, Bluetooth keyboard. And when I look at this, Tim, here's the question that I have. Is the market almost becoming a situation where this is the replacement for the average person using a MacBook? Like the average person using a netbook, a MacBook, a cheap computer. I mean, does it get to a point where this is really a? And I think we lost him. Is this a Andy? I'll ask you. Is this really the replacement for the average person? Because the average person isn't. They're not making video. They're not making audio. They're you know, responding to emails, surfing the web, and doing some Word documents.
Yeah, I think if you're mostly a content consumer and not a content creator, it becomes a very easy replacement. I've seen a lot of people who used to have low-end laptops switch to netbooks. Like the coffee culture has become, the coffee shop culture has become like netbook central. And I think it could easily become tablet central because, you know, it's a great way of interacting with that content, not necessarily making it or editing it or anything else, but for sure in reading and watching stuff. So yeah. I think it could easily take that place.
Yeah. Hold on one second. Let me pull Tim in here.
Yeah, yeah.
As we were talking about Ben.
So I threw a question to you and suddenly realized it had gotten really quiet over there. I'm going to ask this again to you, related to this, the new tablet, with all the things it possibly do, possibly having both a virtual keyboard and a wireless keyboard access, do you think this might be a replacement for the average user who's using that netbook or using the MacBook?
It really put some different perspective on the Mac Air, the people that are using the MacBook Air. Will that product have a lifespan after this? I don't know. I mean, that's really attractive for it being so small and light. And I was talking with a gentleman last night who he was a PC guy, but he bought that because he's got a bad back and it hurts to carry around a PC. And so he went and bought the MacBook Air. In terms of the tablet, you know, I think we talked about this before with clothing. You know, is there going to be a pocket made just for this device?
Yeah.
And that changes everything. If I, you know, today I'm here at NAPI and I'm walking around with a little briefcase, and in my briefcase I've got a MacBook Pro and the power cords that go along with it and the microphone so that I can connect with you guys. And if I could be doing that with something that fits into my coat pocket and not have to carry a bag, I'm in, you know. Yeah. That's well worth the price of admission for as many conferences that I go to.
I just know there's so many times when I carry around my lapbook, my laptop, to make sure that I have access to all that. And I just, I don't need it for most of the day. And I'm carrying around all of this weight and all this extra stuff when what I really want. And now I've gotten into the habit of doing it with my iPhone, you know, putting enough on my iPhone that I have what I need. And it's not quite enough. And that's what I think the real opportunity here is that you just get that last little bit. And if you added that Bluetooth keyboard, I think it just changes. Because it doesn't mean that I carry it around all day, but if I'm traveling, I leave the keyboard in my hotel room and just use it when I'm in the hotel room. But when I'm walking around, I can use the touchscreen.
Yeah, what if they put in a Pico projector and it projects? It can project a keyboard and a screen onto a wall or something.
I think if they do that, then I need to have a coffee maker. You know, so I think that would be awesome, you know, and Apple would, yeah, of course, never give it to us. Anyway, so we're going to find out, I mean, a day after people hear this. This is Wednesday, by the way. Of course, Twit is going to be Mac Break Weekly. We're going to be covering this super heavily. I think everyone but me, I think, is actually invited into the event. So I'm going to be at the host. I'm going to be hosting the whole thing up at Petaluma. Leo and Andy, Daisy, and everybody else is going to be actually at the event, and we're going to be covering it pretty much all day. So,
are you blacklisted?
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's because you've leaked things before.
I haven't, though. See, I don't leak anything. Anytime I work with someone at Apple that says anything that is true, you know, there's lots of things I know that I don't talk about because someone's, you know, put me under NDA. And so all the stuff I do is guess until someone tells me that it's under the NDA, and then I go, oh, I can't talk about that. So anyway, so it's going to be very interesting. Now, I don't know. I don't know why. I think most of the people who are invited are part of the traditional press. And I don't do that much for the traditional press, so I think that's probably the reason. So anyway, it should be interesting. Now, speaking of something that crossed over from both the traditional press and the non-traditional press, this was Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, made a policy speech last week in Washington, D.C. on internet freedom. And one of the things that was interesting about this, beyond what she said, was who she invited. And I actually ended up being one of the people on the. See, I got invited presentation by the State Department, but not Apple. What does that say? What does that say? So
not a bad trade-off, Alex.
No. Actually, if I was going to pick one, I'd take the State Department. So what was interesting was that it was a large crowd. There was, of course, the traditional market was there, the CNNs, the ABCs, the CBSs, but there was also just a massive number of podcasters and bloggers, and you can really see the effect of the staff that works with Secretary Clinton and how they know that they need to engage this kind of wider market. And to be honest with you, I think it gives the president a lot of, and the State Department a lot of leverage by diffusing the outlets, by having a lot of ways for people to get get their message out. Anyway, what it really talked about, of course, what she was talking about was that the internet technologies can be a mixed blessing because they're both used by Al-Qaeda, but also can be used to help undermine authoritarian states. That's part of what she talked about. But she also was talking about how the technologies can be used to potentially open up access to the government. And here's the thing that I think is the most interesting. She talked about Google and China. She talked about a lot of these other pieces. But one of the things that she talks about is that the State Department is going to take a much more active role in funding and developing ways to keep governments, not just everybody else's government, but our government as well, more accountable. So one of the things that she was talking about near the end of her talk was the idea that there was no mechanism for the State Department to fund applications that would let people in real time use their iPhone to interact or their smartphone to interact and report things that aren't working or build things that allow them to communicate. And you can imagine custom-made apps for things like what happened in Iran or what happened in Afghanistan or what happened in these other areas where people were just using text messaging. But what if there wasn't some integrated apps that really let you feed all that stuff back in? In her words, she said it's not very expensive to develop that from a relative sense. But there's not necessarily a profit mechanism that would allow it to happen. So the State Department didn't really have any way of helping people. Now they do. Do we think that this is, Andy, do you think this is a good idea? Are we going down the right direction here?
I mean, any adoption they can have of the way that we're now interacting and communicating would be excellent. I feel like the, you know, government has always had this, like, you know, 5 or even 10 year gap of the communication processes. And I always feel a bit, you know, I've worked with some government groups before, and some of the requirements you hear about that they're using, it's like, when did you guys write these? You know, at what point in the past did you come up with this list, and why are you still using it? So I would love to see them move forward and start actually using the same kinds of ways of communicating that big businesses are having to relearn. And it's hard for them to get that way, but it's one of those things they just have to do because we're moving on and they need to move on along with us.
Tim, what would you like to see what kind of applications, what kind of tools does our government need to be developing or is funding people to develop?
Well, there's actually an app, an iPhone app out there that a friend of mine is a co-founder of, Kirk Didactics, and it's called City Sourced. And what it does, it allows you to, let's say you're walking down the street and you see some graffiti in your neighborhood, you can take a picture of it, geotag it, and then send it in to the city to alert them that, you know, it needs to be taken care of. And so you can multiply that on every kind of issue, both on local, state, and federal government. And I think those are the types of things that we need. You know, those feedback channels that are monitored, and not just, you know, we're not just broadcasting to people anymore. You know, there's a conversation to be had. And I think that's going to take some time for governments to, you know, they've had their city council meetings where they have a dialogue take place, and that's what they're used to, you know, whether it's local, state, or, you know, in front of Congress type thing. But I think now that we can use social media for these types of things, it's going to change the way government is run, is perceived, and you know, when you look at a digital trail in terms of the way that you live your life, every voice message that you leave, you know, think about Tiger Woods, right? Every email that you send, everything is public now.
Well, and, so, and also you have a situation where this is really almost the rise of the little brother. Yeah, sure. So it's not the big brother having a bunch of cameras that they built. It's providing access to anyone who sees an abuse going on, being able to shoot it and have it uploaded directly.
Right. So is that going to make us better citizens because of that? Because we know our actions are being recorded.
Well, I mean, you can imagine almost one of those things where if you see not just the government doing something, but if you see a crime being committed, imagine, you know, streaming it from your iPhone, you know, and having it be going to the, you know, it knows where the, based on your GPS.
Geotag, yeah.
It just knows automatically this is where this is being shot, and suddenly cop cars show up in 2 minutes. You know, yeah. and there's, you know, and that's the kind of stuff that, but those tools, of course, don't exist right now. You know, that's not what's there. And it can be, it also can be just the government, you know, obviously the government doing these things and just providing some kind of pipe that's manageable to, you know, to kind of move all that stuff back. I do think, though, it's important that we make sure that we're doing it, if we're developing these kind of things, it isn't something that is just focused outward to other countries. It really does, as they said, has to hold all governments accountable, including our own. I don't know if that's always in our... you know, always in our policy.
That'll happen in China, right?
Well, not only that. I mean, the thing is in Afghanistan, our country was very happy to keep Karzai in place and not have it get out that, you know, there was a lot of issues, you know, so they spent a lot of energy just kind of keeping everything kind of not, I mean, it was just a lot of people there that just wanted to kind of keep it moving forward, you know, to keep things peaceful, keep things moving forward, and not have it get muddy. And what really muddied the water was a lot of Twitter. You know, a lot of Twittering, a lot of text messaging, a lot of, you know, just a handful of people who really were at the, you know, the different areas. But I think on the other side of that, we see stuff like, I mean, if you look at what Brian Connolly's doing with Alive in Baghdad, you know, I think that's incredibly valuable to hand local, you know, local people cameras and have them, you know, producing, you know, content and showing you really what, you know, what's there. You know, what's actually happening. I mean, Andy, when you watch the news, how much of a grain of salt do you have when you're watching it?
Oh, I mean, I feel like I don't feel like I sit down and watch the news on TV anymore. Like, I really when I want to consume the news, I sit down and see what are the trending news topics on Twitter. I do a quick glance of the Times and New York Times, and then I check Google, and that's where I get news from. And I might believe it if I see it on TV later, but I only believe it because I read it on the internet first.
Right.
So, I mean, I get probably more news from Twitter almost than anywhere else these days, in all honesty. I learn about it from Twitter, certainly before I learn about it from TV. Yeah, I was going to say, one of the areas that I feel, outside of just the politics side of what they're doing, I will say that, you know, I live in Portland, Oregon now, and I feel like they've done an amazing job here, both the nonprofit community and the government, of co-opting things like Twitter to start and keep ongoing communications with the locals about different topics. Our local mayor, Sam Adams, has a Twitter feed, and he did an amazing job of using it to broadcast updates during a recent snow event that we had, and often answers questions really quickly back. So if someone asks a question, it's kind of the, like 311 in New York is a great resource for folks there to dial in and find out information about what's going on. They're doing the same thing with Twitter out here, and I've seen that be pretty effective, and it would be great to see it a little more focused in so that you could get that outside of all your other Twitter news. And if they can figure that part out, I think it's a great service.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, also in the news, this is Conan O'Brien. We're going back to something a little less weighty than the State Department. Conan O'Brien reaches a $45 million exit deal. Now, $33 million is going to go to Mr. O'Brien, and the rest is going to get split up among his 200-strong staff as part of their severance. When asked where he's going to go, his manager, Gavin Pallone, said, we will, you know, they said, well, we have had expressions of interest. Now, the issue is that expressions of interest are a big difference than spending tens of millions of dollars on a show. You know, it doesn't look like ABC is interested. NBC, you know, they're not interested in. You know, CBS would be messy. The ones that Fox lacks a late night show and but hasn't made any promises, Comedy Central could also be a possible future home. Tim, where do you see Conan ending up after all the dust settles?
Well, I mean, realistically, it seems like Fox is where he would go. I mean, it would be great if he decided to go to the internet, because the people that are missing him seem to be the connected 30-somethings that have grown up with him. They watched him when they were in high school and college, and, you know, he's their David Letterman for my generation. And they're connected. They're watching on the net. I mean, it would help out web TV so much if he did his own show on the internet and just said, hey, forget you, broadcasters, I'm doing it myself.
I do have to, when we first saw the offer from like Revision 3, you know, that said, hey, if Conan wants to come over, he can come over here. At first we thought, I mean, I thought that was a little bit silly to even say it in a good, and just a kind of a PR move. But the more I thought about it, I definitely agree with you, Tim, that something that would be revolutionary rather than just more of the same.
Yeah. I mean, there was this guy, his name was Milton Berle.
Right.
He did this wacky thing. Instead of doing it on radio, he did it on this thing called television, and it just took off from there.
Right, right. No, and it would change the kind of numbers that we expect when we look at online television. Now, Andy, do you think it would succeed?
Oh, I would hope for it. I mean, this is exactly kind of what I'm rooting for. You know, I would love to see him make a move to the web, because I agree with you guys. It would be that beachhead moment where people no longer thought, oh, we have to be on TV, and then web is this like cute little cousin of it. It would be a legitimate trend to the internet. So would it succeed? God, I know I would watch it. I'm not even that big a fan of late night TV, but at the same time, I would tune in for this just because I think it's that important to get it out there and get it supported. So we'll see if it happens.
So it'll be interesting. We'll see how that goes. Now, also in the news, kids and media joined at the hip today. This is according to the Huffington Post, and they're talking a little bit about PC World. You know, kids are glued to the internet. The new study says that this is from the Kaiser Family Foundation, that finds that among young people 8 to 18, they use every type of media. It has increased across the board of every type of media over the past 10 years. 5 years ago, the Kaiser Foundation found that young people spent almost 6.5 hours a day using media. Counting multitasking, young people had packed 8.5 hours worth of media content into that time. Today, it has increased by an hour and 17 minutes. So it's really jumped It's jumped up to more than 7.5 hours, including multitasking, 10 hours and 45 minutes per day in media. Now, the real question is that Tim, is this something that, I mean, they're using all this media, but is it so diffuse that the current folks in the media don't really know what to do with it?
Wow. That's a tough one to answer. I think they may not know exactly how to attack it right now, because, you know, if you're a little kid and you're going to watch, you know, SpongeBob SquarePants, you don't care if it's on the computer, you don't care if it's on your iPod, you don't care if it's on your TV, you don't care if it's on your tablet. You just want to watch SpongeBob.
Right.
So, you've got that piece of media. How is it being consumed, and how are you monetizing it? That's what media companies need to focus on, is that they're monetizing it everywhere it can be consumed. Beyond that, kids aren't riding their bikes anymore. You know?
Right.
So that creates a lot more. We have this fear mentality in the United States that bad things are going to happen if you go ride your bike. So kids don't ride their bikes as much as they did when I was a kid. And that gives them way more time to consume media.
Gain a lot of weight.
And gain a lot of weight. So I think at some point the true cost of that non-exercising is going to come back to haunt us in healthcare issues. And so at some point in time, I don't know if it'll be this generation, but we will have to address that.
We'll all end up with those. We're on our way to ending up like those folks at the end of, what was it, WALL-E?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
That's the end of this path. That's just in case when you're listening to it, just watch that show, that movie. That's the end of this road.
Now, how did they get out of that? What did they started just, walking they started again.
Walking again. They could actually walk to places. It was amazing. So and I think that it's going to be interesting, because I do think that especially when you're looking at right now, they've been mixing up all those devices. And again, when we look at what the iPhone does or what this new tablet's going to do, to kind of draw that all back in, is that this is a device that provides all of those opportunities at one time. So it's going to be very interesting. By the way, what is your prediction on the resolution of a device like this, Andy?
Oh, I would hope it's 720p, but at minimum it's got to be 960x540 in order to be even any decent. But 1280x720 would be my hope.
Tim,
1080 interlaced.
It's an old school.
Interlaced, of course, would be the we'll see. So yeah, it's gonna be very interesting to see how all this stuff comes together. Next week, I know what we're gonna be talking about. We're going to be talking about what actually happened, how this actually affects things, what Apple actually said. This is,
everything we got wrong.
Everything we got wrong. We'll make that list.
Alex, have they opened up the developers conference yet?
I don't know if they have, but it's going to sell out in about 45 seconds.
Yeah.
The thing is that all I know is that it is I think what we know is that there's some dates that Apple has already reserved with the Moscone Center. Like if you go to the Moscone Center and you look at the schedule, I think Apple has a scheduled time for an event, which we can assume it's like, I think the end of June or whatever is WWDC. So we know that that's on its way. I think that, I think they're going to end up releasing this. I do think it's going to be an iPhone-based hardware device. And I think that it's not going to be that hard to develop. In fact, I bet you, my guess is that there's going to be a hybrid. You're going to be able to write an application that knows whether it's on a tablet or on an iTouch or on an iPhone, and turn features on and off and adjust the interface based on whatever it's on. So I think that there's going to be a little bit of that. I think that there is, I think you're talking, they're going to announce it, and we're probably going to have a month and a half to 2 months before they ship them. And if they do that, I think the part of the reason to do that is obviously they're probably not ready, but I think the other reason is they want to make sure it ships with applications ready to go. And I think we're going to see. My guess is they're going to launch with 10,000 apps. Andy, do you agree?
Yeah, I think that's at this point, particularly if I agree, I think it's going to be more of an iPhone based type OS than like a full operating system.
It'll be Cocoa Touch.
Yeah, so if they go with that, then there are so many things that probably would already work on it from the iTunes store that it's they could probably launch with more than that.
Right, and if it's just simply an update, I mean, a lot of the hard work with a lot of these things. I mean, interface is important, but also all the underlying all that stuff is probably going to continue to work. So it's just a matter of someone running an update for a lot of this stuff to build a better interface, to build some stuff that takes more advantage of the system. But I think a lot of people will just port what they have, make it all work, run an update, and so it could even be more than that. It could just be a lot of stuff available, and I think that's a key competitive factor and something that makes it very hard for other people to compete. You know, so Tim, are you going to get one?
Yeah, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, it's just a matter of when.
We were talking about that earlier today. We were like, you know, if they just told us, yeah, we're thinking of releasing a pet tablet, we're going to release a tablet sometime in the spring, I would have sent them a check in like September. Like, here,
just be like the Red camera, right? You just send, you get on the list, you send your money in, and then you get it.
Yeah, yeah. I just like, you know, just charge the rest of it when you're ready. You know, send it to me. I'm good to go. So, yeah, definitely. So, Tim, where can people find you?
OneTimStreet.com.
And Andy, where can people find you?
RealWorldVideoCompression.com.
Great. This message you've been listening to is This Week in Media. We are over and out.